The positive benefits of stress, the positive benefits of anxiety. And I think a lot of people might think, what's this guy talking about? Well, we've got to avoid stress, got to avoid anxiety. Actually, the reality is there'll always be stress and anxiety in life to some degree. And it's understanding that it's okay to be stressed and anxious.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzarote. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again, and welcome. And so, following the conclusion of the Feel Well series, we now move on to the Move Well series of Forever Young. And what a way to start, as we welcome one of England's greatest ever rugby players. In a professional career that spanned 11 years and 55 international caps, he was the second highest international try-scoring centre of all time, and was, of course, an integral part of England's victorious and unforgettable World Cup campaign of 2003. And now a hugely respected figure in the game, he is also an author, broadcaster, fundraiser, and considered one of the great characters in sport. Welcome to the show, Will Greenwood.
Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. Thank you very much for that. I think my mum wrote that.
She did. She told me not to say.
Yes, but it's amazing what you can find on Wikipedia. Yeah.
Welcome, Will. And well, how are you today, first of all?
That's a great question. Because I've done some, in amongst that, I've done some teaching, I do some coaching, and I think check-ins like that are crucial. I have a couple of rules. Often, if you ask a normal English bloke, or we'll say fine, so one of my rules is asking twice. No, how are you really?
Yes.
Or I have a slight nuance and change to the question, how's your mental health? As your physical. So if you ask something a little bit more specific, I found on that. So your question, I would tell and then I always come back with a number because I'm a mathematician. I've got a little book on algebra that I'm reading on the train on the way in this morning. Love my maths. And I'm a 9 today out of 10. That's okay. So if I'm a 9, it depends what the scale is. I could be out of 100. That'd be terrible. I'm a 9. I tend to be sort of 1 to 10. And I think it's really important. So when I teach or when I coach, I get this system going, quick check-ins, I'm a 9, move on, give my time to someone else. Actually, great people call me Greens. Greens, I'm a 4 today, I'm here, I'm present, I'm not feeling it, stuff going on at home. It just gives people an opportunity, a release, an ability to talk about it. It contextualises it for co-workers, co-players, management, people who are reporting into the aforementioned people who ask for help. And it just, in that element of understanding what's going on behind the facade, I think it allows people to understand a little bit more about why they might be operating in a certain way, as opposed to the old school system, which was, if you're not an 11 out of 10, I don't want you here, what's wrong with you? Why would toughen up?
That macho corporate culture.
Yeah, and it's the world I sort of grew up in. And the one thing I'm jealous of in terms of the new generation of player, I think... there's a whole heap of things that aren't spectacularly better than we did, but I think where Clive was fabulous and where I think most teams are now really strong on is mental health and checking in.
Yes.
And making sure that when you're turning up for work, you're in a fit state to work.
Yes.
And if you're not, then you're looked after and say, go and have a day off. You might be physically depleted, you might be mentally depleted. I know that was your first question of 35. Those are the sort of length of you get for me. But I'm massive on checking in and checking out. I'm massive on understanding. We call them boom moments. What's the best out of me? How can I get the best out of me? In this instance, you know, it'd be, how would I get the best out of you? I need to understand what makes you tick. What are the landmines to avoid? What are the potholes to avoid? What is going to send you into a grump, a mood, zone that we're not going to get the best out of you from, and how can I create an environment so that every day you come to work we get the best out of you and your team.
That was far and away the best answer to the question, how are you today?
Well, it was comprehensive.
Which we always ask.
Yeah.
And I know you've had a busy start to the morning, which probably in listening to you earlier, I think helps you get to a 9 out of 10. You train regularly. And I think for our listeners, I should say, you're looking incredibly fit and well.
I'm about 3 kilos too light at the moment. I've not overtrained. I've focused a lot in lockdown. And we'll talk about some of the stuff I've done in the past 2 years. I've focused a lot on the aerobic and anaerobic.
Yes.
Didn't have access to gym and weights. And I've just, my mum knows I go a little bit thin in the face if I've overtrained. So I feel great. But my wife would just go, you're at 94 kilos. I think you're better at that. So I know my numbers. Mm. I think that's another thing that's really important for people to understand.
Yes.
They know their KPIs at work.
Mm-hmm.
They'll know revenue streams they've got to find, EBITDAs. They've got all these acronyms that they love.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask them what their resting heart rate is,
mm-hmm.
What their sort of natural sleep patterns are, what's a good nutritional diet, how many units of alcohol should you have a week, and I'll sort of just fudge it.
Yes.
And I'm not going to sit here and try and pretend I'm some sort of neuroscientist or nutritionist, but I've picked up enough along the way to understand what I feel will allow me to become a 9, to feel good about myself, to enjoy my training, to enjoy not being a Tibetan monk, so a couple of nights out, but understanding it's a balance. Mm-hmm.
Well said. And I guess elite athletes and professional sportsmen and women at retirement can go one of two ways. And you've clearly embraced wellness and well-being and your own personal health journey, and you're clearly informed. So what were you doing this morning? I know you mentioned you were rowing. Tell us about that, because it started in lockdown, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. When lockdown happened, a couple of things. One, I started writing a book with a chap called Ben Fennell, which got published last September, which was really enjoyable to do. And two, I got together, I don't exactly know how it happened, but sort of 5 university friends just were struggling with training. It's tough to find the lockdown 3 months, 4 months, you get bored of staring at a garage or going for a run around the garden and this sort of stuff, or 100 press-ups. It's like, come on, I need some stimulus, I need to do something different. And we're fortunate enough to be in a situation that we all happen to own a watt bike and a rower, rowing machine. And we said, should we just meet on Zoom tomorrow morning at 7? And we did it once. We thought, should we do it in a couple of days' time? And that's basically how it started. And so Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and we've kept it going post-lockdown. We're not always there as a group of 5, but there's 5 of us, and the Zoom link will go out from Benny, who likes to be in control of the group and set the sessions. He's the best rower. And we'll log on at about 6 minutes to 7 every morning, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Have a little chat, check in. Mm-hmm. How are you? What's work today? How's family? Make sure we're all doing all right. Anyone need any help? No? Okay, right, what's the session? We'll row maximum of 40 minutes, probably do it in 30, because we've all got jobs to get to.
Mm.
And it'll be long form, short form, whatever that might be, sort of 3 2Ks with 3 minutes rest in between each. If you're banging them out at 8 minutes or 2K, because it's a bit longer.
Yes,
we're slightly faster than that, but I don't want to show off. Then that lasts for, that's a 30-minute
session.
Come
on then, what's your 2K time?
So the best in our group's about, Benny does about a 6:22, and he's 51.
That's impressive.
Yeah, he's averaging 135, yes. 136 per 500 for that. I mean, he's not world record pace, but it's and I'm the slowest, and I come in about 6:48. So we do this sort of set, and then others. So this morning was what we worked out from professional sport, from rugby, and we like to borrow ideas. Is anaerobic sports like football and rugby, which are low oxygen intake, high bursts, high outputs, then rest, injuries or half times or ball goes into touch for all these sports, then certainly in rugby they've worked out, they do a 1-2 ratio. For every one you work, you rest for two. So if a game of rugby lasts, and they do last about 100 minutes from start to finish because of half times and injuries, the ball's in play for about 35. So what's left, 65. So you can see the ratios back on my maths.
Got it.
One on, two off. So this morning was a classic one on, two off. They're great sessions. And you can pick your time. You can have 1 minute on, 2 minute off, 2 minutes on, 4 minutes off. These sessions, if you're working hard in the on period, they're really relevant. So this morning is actually without 40 on, 80 off. 40 seconds on, 80 seconds off, 15 times.
Who in your group determines the session? Or do you take it in turns?
Mainly Benny, but he's doing a charity row. He's doing 110-kilometre row in 24 hours in 3 weeks' time. And so he did an 85K row yesterday. And he's doing 5K every hour, so 20 on, 40 off for 24 hours. It's a good stint.
Impressive, Benny.
Yeah, exactly. So he set the Zoom up. We banned him from training today. So you've got to look after each other on that format as well. So you can't train every day. Put in a good session. So we said you can turn up because he's insomniac. So he was up. Set the Zoom up. He had his dogs ready and he set us off. And I determined today's session. And the dealer always wins, right? You always pick the sessions you're quite good at.
Yes.
So the sprint sessions, I pick up the gold.
But this is all great to hear, and particularly that sense of community. I think when you're training in a group, and of course that was your career, of course, it motivates and galvanises so much more, doesn't it? Because you don't want to let the side down as well.
Yeah, look, I have a metaphorical shake that I drink from each day. One is I do some form of physical health every day. That doesn't mean I'm training every day. But I'll dog walk. I'll do something, even if it's only 30 minutes, every single day. And I need to do that in order to have the second part of my shake, which is to make sure I'm looking after my mental health. So I'm having a drink of physical health, I'm having a drink of mental health every day. And that might be upskilling. I'm reading about maths at the moment. I love maths. My dad loves, he loves the Forgotten War from the Second World War, which is sort of the Asian War, Burma, the Road of Bones. And in lockdown, I thought, that's what dad loves. So I'll try and understand what he likes, and we can have better conversations with dad, these sorts of things. Then the other is to physical health, mental health, and celebrate some form of teamship every day. So what team am I functioning in today? What team am I going to contribute today? I think winning's great, but winning together is the best feeling in the world. And so as long as I have a little shot of those three elements every single day, then I tend to have a good run. It was stolen from an idea. There's a great YouTube speech that I watched that's called Jimmy Valvano. He passed away from cancer. He was a basketball coach. And when he was picking up his award and he could see he was close to passing, he said, if you laugh, think and cry every day, you'll have a great life. And when you think about that, it's amazing.
Amazing.
If you can stir each day to cry every day, you can laugh without, you know, those guttural laughs every day, and at the same time you think about how you can better. So we sort of tweaked it slightly, and so physical health, mental health and teamship every day is vital ingredients for me to have a big smile on my face and check in as a 9 out of 10.
Well said, Will, and that's inspiring and very moving, actually, listening to all of that as well. We've got so much to talk about today, and clearly we'll touch on your career and the values that have shaped you as the person you are today. But maybe for our listeners who aren't aware, there's something going on at the moment whilst we're talking. Try and describe the compromising position you're in.
Yeah.
And why we're not alone.
Well, Becky's in the room with us.
Yes.
And we met probably about a year ago when I was doing a chat about my book. And so this is where I'm going to say one thing that I hope I get right. It's Lanserhoff, right?
Have
I
pronounced it right? Lanserhoff at the Arts Club.
So Lanserhoff, I'm an Arts Club member. I have been for about 10 years. And probably every year I would do a speech open to members, talking about Lions tours, Six Nations, World Cups. There's an element of membership over there that likes their sport. And I'll come in and talk about a topic. On this occasion, it was sort of introducing my book and some of the themes that I had in my book. And we chatted and understood just across the road. There's this amazing facility. Initially, my interest was piqued because Wim Hof is taking over the world.
Yes.
But we originally used to put some ice and water in dustbins and climb into a dustbin at England training. And then they built a frame and put some tarpaulin in. And on the side of the pitch, we'd train. And at Twickenham, these beautiful Victorian claw baths that are still in the change room from the original ground. I mean, they are massive. You can get sort of three people in side on, feet over. In the old days, see the great old photos, they'd be out, they'd have a pint, they'd have a pie, it'd be steaming hot, and they'd be doing everything you shouldn't do after a game of rugby.
Yes.
That then shifted with Dave Reddin, our fitness advisor, and out went the hot water, in came the freezing cold water, in came the ice cubes, there came the stopwatch, certain amount of times, after games, after training, immersed. Now, some of the science, I've been reading about it the past 3 or 4 months, some of the science isn't completely convincing that it has the ultra beneficial effect that some of us converts think it has, but I'm also a great believer in a bit of placebo. And so I think it does stimulate. This we're talking about cryotherapy.
Yes.
And there's a cryotherapy chamber here.
Yes.
Which I'm going to go and spend 3 minutes in at minus 130 degrees. I've always found the benefits of cold water, cold air treatment fabulous for stimulus, for metabolism, for blood flow, for an adrenaline kick.
Yes, the endorphin release as well.
All this sort of stuff. So that's how our interest was piqued. And then on the side of it, there is obviously the ability to have, I remember describing it, a sort of IV drip of multivitamins that I've got, aminos, Bs, Cs, Ds. There's a whole menu here at Lanzerhof that allows you to pick and choose where you might be feeling slightly depleted at. And I think it's a sort of beautiful way to have an MOT on the body. You take your car in for an MOT each year. Why wouldn't you take your own framing for an MOT every now and again and make sure you're giving yourself the best chance of being the best you.
Quite right. So maybe at this stage we should bring in Becky. So what is Will experiencing at the moment, and tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So like Will mentioned, we offer IV nutritional therapy here. So more commonly known as IV drips, as most people tend to have heard of them that way. So Will's got our Life Plus infusion today, which is a special mix that we've made in-house based on research done by Dr. Meyer. And this has got high-dose vitamin C, all of your B vitamins, zinc, selenium, magnesium, and then an abundance of amino acids that then help support the different functions of the vitamins and minerals in helping energy levels, increased immune system functioning, better detox process, enhancing your gut health as well, and then definitely improving your energy levels from the high dose of B12 and B complex. And it's very important, like Will said, because, you know, people take supplements every day, different types, whether they're oral or powder form, but you're not getting 100% absorption from these. By the time it gets from your mouth down to your stomach, your liver then has to metabolize it. You lose about 50% of whatever dose you're taking. Where this is going directly into the bloodstream, you absorb 100%. So it's more readily bioavailable to the cells and you just absorb it straight away. So then in turn as well, the effects are much quicker and you feel better much quicker as opposed to traditional supplement, like traditional ice baths.
Yes, yes.
Perfectly the modern version.
And how often, in an ideal world, how often should someone have an infusion?
Generally once a month. We'd say, so if you're, you know, like Will, you're very healthy, you look after yourself, you eat well, this is just this complements someone's healthy lifestyle. we recommend to our clients, our members, that they have blood tests as well, so we can do full vitamin and mineral amino acid level blood tests, and then we tailor and bespokely make the infusion based on your blood test. So if you're super deficient in certain things, we put higher doses in, or if you're, you know, over dosing, so to speak, on vitamins and minerals, we take those ones out because if you don't need it, your body will just filter it through naturally. But rule of thumb, we say once a month.
Okay. And and I think you'll agree, Will was particularly brave this morning.
Wasn't that brave little soldier?
Yes. Didn't even flinch.
I think he needs a sticker.
Everyone. It doesn't matter how old you are, everyone's a sticker.
Yes. Okay. It'll be arranged.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Becky. So, Will, coming back to, well, you're obviously training at a very high, intense level, it sounds like, in your little rowing community. Training.
Actually, just a bit, so where we love to talk about as well is it's, we have a friend of ours, so of the fire, but it was key to remain nameless, who was at a different stage of life and we were actually worried about and looked, I'd put more weight on. He was a fabulous rugby player in his youth. Work gets in the way, puts some weight on. And in fact, I could potentially talk about actually Benny in a positive way. He was 126, 127 kilos when he started lockdown. He's now down to 100.
Goodness.
And over lockdown through training. So in terms of our other friend who's with us, he felt a bit intimidated about, oh, you're all great rowers. We don't do distances. So we don't do, because otherwise, if you do distances, some people finish faster and you're on the rower at the end. It's a bit demoralising. So we do times and we only operate in times. So we'll train for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes on, 3 minutes off, whatever it might be. And in that 5 minutes, you just work as hard as you want to work. And then if you want to share your scores, great. If you don't want to share your scores, who cares? We don't care. But we're training together and we range from a sort of 6:23, 6:24 2K time to somewhere to probably an 8 minute 2K time. That's no, you'd think these people can't train together. Actually, we train together and have the most amount of fun. So what I'm really conscious of also talking about on all this is pairing up with people, and there are ways. It can be intimidating. You're not sure where to start. Shall I even bother starting? How could I train with those people? Doesn't make sense. I'm a different shape. I've got different. Actually, you can find ways to train where age, size, Olympic athlete, pub team player becomes irrelevant. It's actually the joy of training together. The other thing that is worth mentioning is if you know four of your friends are on a Zoom call at 5 to 7. Your alarm glows at 6:15 because you've got to have some food in you before you train. Just a little bit of a bite to eat, or maybe a coffee or whatever it might be in the morning before you train. But most of us, certainly in lockdown, if you're working from home, just go, oh, snooze. Snooze. I'll do it later. And how often do you do it later and you never do it later? It doesn't happen.
No.
So I reckon of the, in 2 years, we've probably trained together 300 times. People go, wow, do you drive this grid? No, I've got Benny and Mincy and Dooney and Keno. They are way better at getting up than I am. And I reckon if I was on my own of those 300, I reckon I'd have probably trained 100 times. With these guys, I've missed maybe two or three. I've trained 297 times because if you're part of a team, you can't let them down.
No,
you can't be on the Zoom call. They can't be on the start line and go, oh, should we wait for him? Should we wait for him? Should we wait for him? No. We cut the rope at 7 o'clock when it starts. If you're not on, you're not on. And you just, there's a responsibility to the team that I've always loved. And so we're really inclusive in terms of performance levels. And it's really engaging and you just, the best way of putting it, you don't want to, it's like letting your favourite uncle down. You don't want to let the team down by not showing up time after time.
Will, listening to this, I think you can get the whole nation rowing at 7 a.m.
Well, Joe Wicks did it at 9, didn't he?
Yes, I mean, he did.
That's why we love Joe Wicks.
I think you're onto something here.
Yeah, it's, and we try and, you know, we don't try and change the world, but, you know, this organisation here is about health and wellness. And a lot of people think, oh, it's not for me, and it's, you need to be, you need to, know everything about food, and you need to have loads of money, and you got to have all the equipment, and you got to all be Olympic standard. That there's ways and means for everyone to increase their health and their wellness. And at the top of that list, Matt, is surround yourself with empathetic, caring people who want the best for you, and you'll be amazed what you can achieve.
Talking of which, let's look at your days as a professional rugby player, and clearly I'm assuming maybe the pinnacle, of course, was the England World Cup win in 2003.
My mum thinks it was the under-11 sevens.
So I stand corrected.
In 1983, I scored a hat-trick in the final. She said you should have walked off, dropped the mic and never played again. All the injuries... And the concussions and the pain and the heartache. She says that at that stage, it didn't get any better for her.
So, that aside, I really need to meet your mum one day. Yeah. She sounds amazing. Playing, of course, under the watch of Sir Clive Woodward, who, as we all understand, was meticulous in his preparation. Clearly, the team all bought into that, but maybe to different degrees. Was it a struggle? What was it like? Give us a flavour of what it was like training in that lead up to the World Cup, and how he had left nothing.
Well, I mean, winners get to write the history. Mm. Anyway, everyone write the history, but you only tend to read the winners' version. Mm. The reality is, we were spectacularly average at the start. We lost a heap of games. Mm. I wasn't part of the team, but I was part of the squad that lost 76-0 to Australia. Everyone goes, wow, that team awesome, let's bring them back. Well, you might have airbrushed over a few things. So in the early years, it was tough. In the early years, not everyone bought into it. Many thought it was a crackpot, bringing in new ideas, sports science, data, GPS systems, training with the Marines.
Which, of course, is not standard, but certainly commonplace.
No, it is absolutely completely standard now. And a vision coach, Dr. Cheryl Calder, amazing woman. A guy called Humphrey from Lloyd's Development Capital would come in and talk to us. And so we had all these ideas, and some were like, this will never work. Let's go back to the old days. It's much better. And let's look after your own jersey. Actually, a senior leadership group within it, and you're talking about the names of Martin Johnson, Lawrence Dallaglio, Jason Leonard, Neil Back, Matt Dawson, the older guy. Mm. We're like, oh, actually, finally someone who can take us to a different level. Mm. There were others who always, there's no need to talk about the negatives and the names there. There are others who are not sure about this, and slowly they disappeared from the group, and more people began to buy into that element of training, marginal gains. Mm. We had a phrase which is, do 100 things 1% better equals world champions. So it was much more about not trying to change the world in one day. What can we incrementally, I think the Japanese have a phrase called Kaizen. Most organisations, most companies, most countries have different ways of articulating that phrase. As David Braille said, the aggregation of marginal gains. So it was a great place to train, it was a great place to work, which, because it was work. He picked us for what we could do rather than for what we couldn't do, which is really enlightening. A lot of people just see the negatives. Oh, we can't do this. Like, so you're always chasing perfection. Actually, what he wanted was different skill sets coming together, sort of complementary skill sets coming together, making a greater team. And 2 or 3 years of struggle, the governing body backed him after a failure in the World Cup in 1999 when some would have got rid of him. And thankfully, they gave him a second chance. And we really never looked back from January the 1st, 2000 until November the 22nd, 2003. Yes, there were a couple of losses along the way, but I can count them on one hand, literally count them on one hand in the next 4 years, which we need to think about the countries we're playing home and away on a regular basis. Mm. Just puts into context how good Clive was and how good Martin's team was.
And there's a lesson in itself, isn't it, about sticking with the manager that that clearly has the values for success. But in the modern game, in other sports too, of course, managers are churned at a very high rate, and and that constant state of flux does not give a club or a team the foundations to succeed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And all the great dynasties tend to have been built on a great coach, a great captain, sort of being at the heart, being the backbone of a team's success. You have to at least consider the other side of the story, that not everyone is destined to be a great leader. Therefore, at some stage, you have to say thanks, but no thanks. And that's where you can get trigger happy, you can get nervous about performance. If you were playing in a sport where there is relegation, your team's flirting with relegation, I like this guy, he's got this. I like this manager, she or he, I think, got great potential. Whoa, we're 18th in the Premier League and there's only four games left. They've got to go, or they don't have to go. And if you're the owner or the CEO of that organisation, then yes, I think we would all agree that stability tends to create success. But not all managers and coaches are great managers and coaches. And so you're trying to marry those two contradictory statements together in terms of how long you give people before you try the next. Thankfully with Clive, they gave him a second go.
And the rest is history. And what did you learn about yourself in that period? Clearly you were continually being taken out of your comfort zone, presumably as players, and being stretched to improve. Marginal gains you talked about. What did you learn about your character and yourself?
I think... You understand what you learned about yourself years later. I didn't think necessarily that you'd have said at the time, I wouldn't have considered myself a scrapper or a battler or somebody who gets up and goes again. I sort of look back on it and go, 6 shoulder reconstructions, 2 groin operations, nearly died on a rugby field, got dropped, got booted out of a team, was told at 18 to try a different sport. And I get there on November 27, 2003, and you go, well, you must have been a little bit of a scrapper. You must have cared about your performance to keep coming back when you kept getting knocks like this. And so that's something that I take great pride in, actually. I'm pretty determined, which I wouldn't have said if you'd asked me that question at 24, 25. But looking back on it now, I think to have made the pitch all those years later, after some of the obstacles, both on and off the field, that I had to leap over, was strong. And then the other, I think, is an interesting one. Again, when you consider the topics that people are talking about now, is the positive benefits of stress, the positive benefits of anxiety. And I think a lot of people might think, what's this guy talking about? We've got to avoid stress, got to avoid anxiety. Actually, the reality is there'll always be stress and anxiety in life to some degree. And it's understanding that it's okay to be stressed and anxious. If you then have the support mechanisms and the capabilities to deal with that, the people to reach out to ask for help, and actually you'll find that stress and anxiety can be a great driver for performance. And it's finding your own, it's another acronym, I can't remember, I need to credit the name of the book and I can't quite remember what it is. It's a sports science book and it's called, the acronym is Eyes Off, I-Z-O-F, and that everyone has an individual zone of optimum performance. And in that, it's saying there are adrenaline spikes. There are I don't know enough about the sports science. So there is genuine. The words I'm thinking of, which aren't the right words, serotonin, dopamine. There are hormones. Is probably the right word. There are different hormones that are released before competition, before work. Because for me, rugby was work. That are released, and there is an optimal level of those for each individual along the spectrum that says, actually, if I'm getting that level of fear, and you can talk about that fear,
yes,
I'm going to play great. If I don't have enough fear, I don't show up. If I have too much fear,
yes,
I'm terrified of making a mistake.
It's how you channel it all.
So it's therefore finding out what your individual zone of optimal performance is, and then making sure that every time you go to work that you have that capability to find that edge. I mean, people talk about it as the edge, that's another way of putting it. And so for someone who often thought stress was weakness, mustn't show it, I sort of look back on it now and go, what did I learn, which is the other part of your question, was it's okay to be stressed, it's okay to be a little anxious, but understand that if you're ranking it from 1 to 100, again, my maths comes into it, if I'm operating between 65 and 85, that's great. I mean, I don't know what the scales are, I don't know what my axes are here, I'm just throwing numbers at you. But if I'm at 20, I ain't going to be great at work. And if I'm at 95, then I should be really worried about what I'm doing to my body, whether this work is conducive to a healthy lifestyle. The much shorter version to that question, which was what did I learn about myself, retrospectively, I'm pretty determined and I don't mind a bit of stress.
Nicely summed up.
Yeah.
and Will, you know, we're sitting here getting excited, listening to all of that, you know, the build up to a game, how you channel your nerves and stress, all geared up to the game at the weekend. As a professional, with everything that you achieved, and of course, going back to the World Cup win, you know, the effect it had on the nation, you would have been, I'm sure, acutely aware of the feel-good factor that it generated at the time. It's 19 years ago, it's incredible, but we can all remember how we all felt as spectators watching these incredible achievements. But as a professional that reaches the end of his career, how was that adjusting to, you know, the daily grind and without the adulation and the, you know, the full stadiums and just being recognised even? You know, a lot of sportsmen do talk about that, and maybe not as much as they could or should, because there's an adjustment to make and maybe not everyone deals with it as well as they can.
Yeah, you sort of laugh and joke about the first Monday after retiring. Why aren't 80,000 people chanting my name when I walk to the office? What exactly is this? What crappy organisation am I working for that I don't have pom-poms and cheerleaders and yes, drums beating and welcoming me to the office? Yeah. Welcome to our AI organisation. We're doing algorithms today, but we're going to have a little rah-rah Rasputin before we start. So I was really lucky. I'm from an era where I went to school, I finished school, I did all right at A-levels, I went to Durham University, half-decent uni, I got a degree in economics, I applied for a job in the city, I worked in the city for 2.5 years, I did job applications, I did interviews, I worked on multi-million pound deals, I had scary bosses that I didn't want to let down, and find enough dough to pay for my rent in London and feed myself. And so, you know, I don't want to overplay this, but I had done normal things. Playing professional sport isn't that normal. Winning World Cups isn't that normal. And then getting, as you say, all that, a million people at Trafalgar Square and NBE, and you meet the Queen, that's not normal. If you think that's normal, then you are struggling after you finish.
I suppose that's the question.
Yeah, yes. And I think the reality is you've got to go and find another passion, find something that you love doing, that you deeply care about, get yourself involved in an organisation that wants to be better every day. It's sort of ironic in this question, because we're talking about the first half of my life. But the other thing is, which is fun to do in a sort of educational capacity, and maybe some people can take some ideas away from the podcast that they might just slowly change, quietly do things differently. But I'm actually talking about the first part of my life, but the key is not to spend the second part of your life trying to relive the first part of your life. Here's me reliving the first part of my life on this podcast.
Only because I've asked you.
Correct, yeah. But so trust me, I don't walk down the street telling people, well, let me tell you a little bit about building a great team. No, and you do that for some speeches, and I go and I do some leadership talks. I do some team building events on that, where you get asked to go and run. But the vast majority of the time, I'm sort of father of three. I go down my local rugby club, Maidenhead. I run around with the lads on a Tuesday and Thursday. I write for a newspaper. I work for an AI company. I've got usual group of mates who, if I remotely start talking about what happened in 2003, they smack me in the back of the head and go, "Oh my God, you're so boring."
Oh, they sound like great friends to have.
Yeah, they're really good. So where I think, to answer your question, it can be difficult if you haven't got a good support staff around you. If the organisation or the sporting body you've been working for haven't been preparing you for it, which I don't think they used to. And now, so there's a real, I think there's a, it's really laser targeted on the rugby community. I think those lads born before 1975 are fine. Because they went through school, they went through college, they had jobs, then they finished rugby, then they could go back to it. Fast forward to now, kids born after 1990, there's great academies at the end of your club career, they're doing work placements, they're paying for degrees, there's really great mental support and educational upskilling support. That leaves me between 1975 and 1990, a sort of period where they were 20 when rugby first turned pro. They left university halfway through, to kids who just left school at 18 and played rugby until about 2012. I hope you're keeping up with me there. Sort of that 1975 to 1990, that 15-year bracket where those kids, those lads who played professional rugby, they were commodities, they played, they weren't really looked after. Thanks very much, go and look after yourself. And you forget either they left uni early, or college, or an apprenticeship, or they didn't even start those, played rugby, half decent with the rugby ball, picked up an injury, did all right, and then stopped at 30, and you just go, right, what next? There, so that group I know struggled a little bit more than the groups either side of them, and I think it's the responsibility, and as we talked about a little bit earlier, I think most governing bodies now are acutely aware of mental health, of post professional sport being quite a high driver for depression, anxiety in later life, because they weren't, the men and women who finished and who weren't looked after weren't equipped. He said, well, they're grown adults, it's different if you've been in this environment the whole time, or you're in a professional spot and they're telling you what to eat, when to train, where to be. Have you got your passport? You hand your passport to a team manager, you don't even check in at airports.
Right.
You don't book holidays, you know, and you think, you don't pay gas bills, you know, being up to Man City a couple of times, they've got a whole team making sure that the players, when they turn up on Saturday, all they need to focus about is playing. Multi-billion pound businesses don't worry the players with banal functions like paying a gas bill.
You're quite right, it's all taken care of. That's the big sea change in professional sport, isn't
yeah.
it? However, those are people who will live the rest of their lives post-retirement. So, but I think what you're saying is they are preparing the ground for them post-retirement more these days.
Correct.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's critically important that we do, especially in a, you know, even for, you might say, well, football, they've got so much money, they don't need to work again. Oh man, that's a recipe for disaster.
Of course.
If you don't want to work again, you gotta be stimulating the little grey cells.
Yes.
You're an exceptionally relaxed human being if you can play golf every day for 50 years and not want to try and do something else.
Which brings me to this question, and coming back to rugby, I guess, and the current crop of stars that we have, Marcus Smith springs to mind, but not just rugby players. What advice do you have for anyone striving to reach the top in their chosen sport and stay there?
That's a mass. I mean, I can give you 15-minute answers on small questions. That is a that is the meaning of life question. Advice I would give. So in the, let's think about as a rugby player first, not a human being. I would say we have talked today about health and wellness. Mm. Oh my God. I mean, university mates of mine would be throwing things or throwing their ear pods into the Thames going, this guy ate pot noodles and drank 30 pints of lager a night. So if I look back and think, how good could I have been? Mm. I toyed at it. Mm. And now I'm realising the importance of it. So as a player, having no regrets and being your best self, there's no way I got anywhere near to that. In the way I looked after myself. And now I wished I had, but I didn't. But so how can I change that? I can't, but I can be better now.
Yes.
So it's a finite length of time. You're a professional sportsman. I'm not asking them to live like a Tibetan monk, which is a phrase I often use, but look after yourself. Give yourself the best chance of being fit on a Saturday and performing to the best of your ability. And then you can look back at the end of your career and go, there are no regrets. Had Johnny Wilkinson not dropped that goal and had not been part of that team, I can sort of laugh and joke about eating pot noodles and drinking loads of beer.
Yes.
But if he hadn't dropped that goal, I'd be thinking, oh, you muppet. Mm. I dropped a ball late in the second half, normal time, when we're on the attack. Mm. If I'd looked after myself, would I have not dropped that ball? Like, sure. I know these can't go. The little margins that you replay in your head. So one is give yourself the best chance of being the best you. And then the other thing would be do your absolute best to be as kind to people as often as possible, because you get put on a pedestal. It's very easy to go, I don't need these people. Why? This photographer, get on with it, take the picture. This ambassadorial role I'm doing, oh God, these Muppets that I've got to go and work with, them, but I get a free car out of it.
Did you ever see that amongst your teammates and call it out?
There's probably times I was probably that person, you know. Look back on it, was I the nicest human being in my 20s? No, absolutely not. There's an element of trying to get to the top that has to make you be a little bit self-centred and focused on yourself. But the one thing you always have in control, you are always in control of, and I can't remember which great philosopher said this, it certainly wasn't me, was you're always in control of how you make people feel. And you can either choose to make people feel better about themselves or choose not to make them feel better about themselves. And every time you come across people, if you can think, I'm going to leave this person in a better place than I found them, I'm not saying you need to be Mother Teresa and bless them, but actually when they walk away and go, that was a really nice interaction with a really nice human being, I think that'll put you in pretty good shape for the rest of your life.
Amazing advice, and you're clearly very self-aware, Will, and it sounds like that's been a process over the course of your career and post-rugby as well. You're a family man. Do you feel you have a balance to your life with work, home and family and play?
Much better now. I think most older people say that. Like, oh, I wish I did. I think I've got a fabulous wife, partner, pal, Caro, who has educated me in emotional intelligence in the 26 years we've been together, and turned me from a northern emotional rock into someone who's much more comfortable talking about feelings, emotions, physical ailments, just all the sort of stuff. Oh, you can't talk about that. Actually, our household, sometimes I go, oh my God, what are we talking about now? Really? Over breakfast? Shut up. It's not these things, you know, it's fine. It's like, and actually, it normalizes it. And so any stigmas related to virtually any topic are basically removed. There's sometimes my vocabulary is a little bit clumsy, but it's enthusiastic in a way that I want to be part of the conversation and help, but that I haven't found or learned the appropriate or right words to use around topics. But I'd rather people try to be in conversations and occasionally make a mistake than stay silent and not get involved. And so on the balance side of it, I do okay. We live with neurodiversity, which I find difficult at times. Yes. I come from a school teacher's background. This is what you do, and you're working on time, get it done. And actually not everyone's wired the same. In fact, everyone's wired completely differently. And so having lived in that world or supported that world, I don't live in that world, that would be wrong of me to say, I'm going to try to support a child in that world, then I think it has to allow you, or certainly be someone who's more comfortable with difference, which I don't think I was when I was younger.
Mm. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We could talk for hours and listen to you for hours. You're a real inspiration, and there are some very wise words there that I know we can all benefit from. Your infusion's finished. How was that?
I feel 21 years old. Becky has done her job. I'm a regular now.
You look it too.
Great, yeah. Yes. It's again, I suppose the question for you, Becky, because often you go, well, I don't feel any different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit like, well, I've done one training session, it hasn't made a difference. Mm-hmm. Or I've had one kale sandwich, I don't feel any different. But it doesn't. It's an accumulation.
Yeah.
Of just things, like there is no.
Yeah.
Oh God, damn it! I came here for a magic wand, and but I know there is no magic wand. It's just small incremental changes to lifestyle can make such a massive difference.
Exactly.
Well, cryotherapy next.
Yeah.
So, step into the breach and maybe report back on that another time.
But, absolutely.
Well, it's been a great, great pleasure as always, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.